Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Okay, everybody, we've just launched our new website. It's www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. You can click on the navigational links up top. There's the home link, the services link, the donation page link is there as well. When you get ready to own your own business, for those of you who own your own business or want to own your own business, there's a link available up top for that. Also, all of the previous audios that we've done on our wealth building classes, so click on the wealth building class link for all your previous audio. You can go in anytime you get ready. And as we go along, we'll add our new audio plugs under that title, the wealth building class link. Okay, www.newdebtelimination.com. Well, just what is it that New Debt Elimination do? What are they all about? Well, to get all the information on New Debt Elimination, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. That's newdebtelimination.net. Learn all about what we do right there. All the information in regard to us and what we do involving our natural food production, growing organic food and herbs and spices, and teaching of contract law, and many other things are described for you in detail at www.newdebtelimination.net.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Hakamana L. Bay. And this evening, we will be dealing with the following: love, romance, sex, relationships between the brothers and sisters. Our special guest this evening will be Lisa Parker. And I have to apologize. We seem to be running a little bit late. We had some technical difficulties trying to get on to the broadcast. So you bear with me. And we're going to be starting shortly. We're going to be dealing with the following: who is the so-called black man and black woman on the planet? What should he do about the only woman God gave him? Should he fall in love with his woman? What should she do if he doesn't do what she wants him to do? How should she react to him and his other woman? Should they indulge in oral sex? Where did oral sex come from in the first place? For what reason should people of African descent date, sex, or marry outside of their race? Now, this is just some of the a small amount of the questions that we're going to deal with this evening. We're going to try to cover the entire gambit here this evening. And I'm going to be opening up the line shortly and allowing my guests to get in. And keep in mind that this is a hands-on class, so we definitely are looking for you to interact with what we're discussing here this evening. Okay? All right. Hold on. Area code 412. Can you tell me who you are?
It's Lisa Parker.
Hello. Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
Okay, Lisa, I have to apologize to you. We was fighting, trying to get on here. We had some technical difficulties getting online, but we are here now. We're live, and we're ready to go. Okay?
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
And I thank you and appreciate you for being here with us. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and because you're the creator of the educational curriculum for African American
mm-hmm.
girls to build self-esteem awareness and self-awareness and self-esteem. Tell us a little bit about that.
I've worked with children for about 25 or so years, and my last 12 years I've been in the public school systems here. And I've worked from K through 12, and my position was cut, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking about, you know, all the years that I've worked in education, and I looked at how our young ladies behave and how they carry themselves, and if you ask them, do they know about their history, they don't know very much, and it's not because they don't want to know. They just don't know that they don't know what's important. And so I decided to do this curriculum. I had a mentor who was just absolutely fabulous, Dr. Barbara Sizemore, who is now an ancestor, and she always told me I should always remember to give back. That's the way I'm giving back, by providing this curriculum and this education for our young ladies, because they need help. And it's not just, you know, myself sitting there and reading to them. We're interacting, we're talking, we're discussing music and the clothes and why do you think this and why do you think that. So it's something that is very hands-on, and they enjoy it. And I had the pleasure of presenting my curriculum last year at Duquesne University in a workshop. But what was astounding and great for me is that I had my workshop, and the keynote speaker was Dr. Joy DeGry, who deals with post-traumatic slave syndrome. And I was floored that the information that I presented was similar to, it was a micronism to her macronism. You know what I mean? And I was just really encouraged by that. And that sister, she presented so much information, she received a standing ovation. But what was difficult for me and a lot of the other African Americans in the room, including the folks that I was sitting with, is the fact that we had to hear about how we suffer. And it was so much for me, Brother Tarka, that I had to go and garden. Gardening allows me peace and tranquility, and it helps my spirit kind of rejuvenate. And the graphic way that we were treated was just a lot to digest as an African American. That sister's powerful. You know, she should be on shows talking about that more than not, but it's some information that needs to be dealt with, and I think that ties into the relationship piece that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Okay. Well, this is the way I see it, and this is what I found out. All too often, everybody seems to be aware of what happened to black people in slavery, but let us talk about what the black male went through, or the so-called black male went through. He was lynched, hung, was castrated, and all this right here. And it seems to be, to me, and this is the way I see it seems to be a like out when it comes to what happened to the sister during slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did this thing affect her? And you know, because anytime, and this is just what I see. Anytime we're talking about slavery that occurred against people of African descent in America, we always highlight what happened to the male. Okay, this happened, that happened, but nobody specifically zeroes in on the sister.
Mm-hmm.
How did it affect her? How can she be inside the United States after suffering the traumatic syndrome of watching her man being taken away, watching her children being taken away from her, watching her being raped and beaten and all this stuff? We don't see that. We always see what happened to the male. So
mm-hmm.
I have to come to the conclusion that she is definitely affected. She was effective. And in your opinion, could you paint picture for us this evening in regards to the sister? How did this thing affect her, if you don't mind?
You know, it's very interesting, Brother Tarika. You say that the male has been talked about. And quite often, when I'm with a group of people, the female is always talked about. And one of the things that I do during my presentation of my curriculum, if I'm presenting it somewhere, I have this exercise that I have everyone in the workshop close their eyes. And I say,
okay,
imagine being a black man and a black woman during slavery. And every night this master comes down to the barn where your family is, the man and the woman and these children. And every night he picks this woman to rape while her man is laying next to her or near her in the bed. Or he may have her outside and he can hear it, but there's nothing he can do. I said, now imagine that when you come home from work in 2014, 2013, your kids are gone, and there's nothing you can do. But every night, in this one particular night, the slave master comes, and instead of being with the woman, he takes the man. We have to remember that the mentality of those slave masters before they even became slave masters was survival of the fittest. That's what they were doing in Europe. They were killing each other. So when they had another person to take all of that out on, they took it out on the black man and the black woman. And the black woman is still suffering from that. The black woman is still suffering from dealing with slavery. We all are. Both of us are, black man and women. We didn't get a therapist couch to lay on after slavery. You know, they said it's over. Now go fend for yourself. They didn't give us no time on the couch to talk about what they saw last night or last week or last month. The layers are still there, and that's why we have so many issues with relationships. And the self-hate is there. You know, I mean, one of the topics we're going to talk about, should we date outside of our race? I have a problem with black men who say, oh, black women are this and black women are that, and that's why I date white women. And then sisters are doing it too now. Black men don't want to work. The stereotypes. And we have to understand that that's still systematic and symptomatic of what we've been through. The chains are gone, but they're still programming us mentally. And that's something we have to deal with.
Well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
How does that manifest itself today, as far as the sisters behavior? Give me a breakdown on that so we know exactly how this thing has affected the system today.
Well, let me say this, Brother Taharka, before I go any further. I don't have all the answers. I'm not perfect. I've made my mistakes in relationships as well. But it manifests its ways in many ways. It manifests itself in many ways. The self-hate, the clothes we wear, the revealing clothes, the way we sleep with a lot of men, unhealthy relationships. We can't relate to each other, woman to woman. A couple of weeks ago, I turned around to give a sister a compliment on her hair. She cursed me out. Cursed
wow.
me out. I was floored. But
okay.
I can't let that one sister stop me from complimenting other black women. You know what I mean? The way we talk, the way we behave, the way we live, we don't eat healthy. There are a lot of ways that the residue of slavery is affecting everything we do. We relax our hair and count our hair, and I was guilty of that, so much that it's causing breast cancer and fibroids in our body. Why?
Wow.
Because we want to look like them. We want to look like we bleach our skin. All of it. It's a lot of stuff going on mentally.
Well, I do see that. I have to agree with you. And this is my opinion based on what I have studied and what's inside my brain, inside my body, inside of what I know. This is what I see. Anytime I step out my environment and I see a woman of African descent that has a perm or has long hair or her hair decorated in any kind of fashion other than natural born hair attached to her scalp, to me, that tells me that she has been affected mentally as a result of what slavery has done to so-called black people inside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way I
agree.
Feel. When I see any man or any woman that's dealing with their skin issues, if they are bleaching their skin and they are doing their hair and they look like brothers and sisters, but they sound like somebody else. To me, that tells me that this individual has been affected by what slavery has done to people of African descent inside the United States. This is why I said, and I have no choice because I don't have any Eurocentrism in the consciousness. I don't watch TV on a regular basis like people do. I'm fully aware of my culture, my ancient story, everything to the point that I don't have to think twice about something when somebody kills a person of African descent. Like the shooting, we had a couple of shootings down here in Florida. We had the Trayvon Martin thing, and then we had the other young man behind him where he was, they were playing loud music, and the Caucasian gentleman just shot him down. I don't have to think twice about that because I don't have a Eurocentric consciousness. Anything involving my family and my children is automatically dealt with immediately with an entirely different consciousness. The only thing I need to know is who did it and where you at. That's all. To me, the fact that you are a policeman or you are a senator or you are the president of the United States, it rolls off my back like water off the back of a duck. The only thing I need to know is where you at and what you done. That's all. And then, you know, I'm not going to, now don't get me wrong, I'm not going to do any hooping and hollering and threatening and talking. I ain't going to do none of that. I'm not going to do any marching or protesting or none of that. The only thing I need to know is who did it and where they at. That's all.
I hear you. I hear you, brother. I hear you.
And the reason and I'm telling you this
mm-hmm.
is because I don't have that inside my body or my brain.
I
don't know nothing about no Jesus. You can believe in him. Just move out my way so I can get to the solution. And after it's all over with, I read the Bible if you need me to read it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand what I'm saying? Because and the reason why is because I have total control of my own consciousness.
That's right.
You can't
pee right.
on me.
That's right. Well, you know, Brother Taharki, you made me think of something. And I was talking to a young man at work yesterday about this. You know, Trayvon Martin and that young man that just got killed by that white guy, when they read the verdict, his mom said, well, we're forgiving. We pray for him and we forgive him. And this is what has been taught to us, not what you just said, but what has been taught to us. And Trayvon Martin and that young man is just a pebble in the pond of these black men being killed all over the United States. Not just the United States. Period. It's systematic.
Listen.
And one of the things that our people get so wrong so many times is that this justice system is going to treat them fairly. It is not going to do that. Jesse Jackson got upset because his son got sentenced, but nobody went to jail for the misappropriation of funds, you know, on Wall Street. Because you're not white, Jesse. Just because you eat with them and talk like them and live near them, that does not mean you belong. And every now and again, these black folks with all this money get their black folk wake-up call. When they lock Oprah out of the jewelry store, black folk wake-up call. We have to understand we need to love who we are and build on that. Because until we do, we're going to keep getting Trayvon Martin. We're going to keep getting the young man with the loud music that got shot to death. And he didn't even get convicted of that murder. You know, it's something that needs to change. Our mindsets need to change, but they are programming us every day. Every day they can put that TV on and the music and the media, they program our people to believe we are a part of a sick system. Yeah.
I have to agree with you 100%, 100%, but it's because I remember once, because I've always been this way, and I'm going to tell you something that people of African descent need to understand. We need to learn something about where we came from, about our family. You need to learn everything that you possibly can about your grandmother, your grandfather, their mother, their father, their mother, their father, and on and on and on down through the circle. And you need to know this. This is very important for you to know. And I think this is something that we haven't done, because a lot of us, you know, I can't see no reason in the world why I would let someone trace my family tree that don't look like me. I don't want to hear nothing about what you got to say about tracing my family tree. I don't need you to do that. I asked my mother to tell me about when we were slaves. She told me, she said, we weren't never no slaves. She gave me, it, and it took me days to get this information out of her that she just simply had never taught us. She would tell us a lot of things that happened in the past, but she never would get down to the bottom nitty-gritty and go back into details about this stuff. My great-great-great-great-great-grandmother lived well over her hundreds, all the way into her hundred and her teens. And I remember her after I got grown because one of her children passed, and we went back to bury them. And when I went in the house, she didn't know I was standing there. She said, "I want to see Button. Where Button at?" And my mama said, "Hey, he's standing right here. Button, that's you." I said, "Yeah, come over here, boy." And I came over there. She said, "Boy, you was a ringtail. You just like your granddaddy, your great-great-granddaddy. You just like him. You just like him." And she asked my mama, she said, "Tell me, what has he done? Where y'all at?" And my mama tried to explain this, that, and the other about doing this, that, and the other. She said, "Yeah, all that sounds good." She said, "What about shooting? Does he shoot?" And my mama said, "Yes, a lot." And I looked at her. I said, "I need to have a conversation with you for you to tell me about what went on with you and my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather," because I found out after I asked my mother. I said, "Tell me about what happened with them back in the day." And she began to tell me. And I asked her, I said, "Well, Mama, you say my great-great-great-great-granddaddy on his own land had his own cattle, his own horses, 13 sons and 9 daughters, and
wow,
he had his own army on his own land." I said, "But you," I said, "wasn't the Ku Klux Klan there?" She said, "Yeah, the Ku Klux Klan, they were right down the street, but they didn't come over here." I said, "You mean to tell me that the Klan didn't come there?" She said, "No." She said, "My mama, my great-great-grandmama told me that the sheriff told the Ku Klux Klan they can go anywhere they want to go, but don't go there, because if they come here, it will create a war through the entire state. Don't go there messing with Bro Mo and that army." She said, "We see them ride through the woods with the white sheets on. They're doing all kind of stuff. But they didn't never mess with us, and they didn't never mess with nobody connected to us. Because if they had her, it would have been a great shaking in the land." So, I don't understand why, and I keep telling brothers and sisters, when they tell me about what happened, my first question is, okay, what did you do about it? They shot your son down in the street. Where's his daddy? What did he do? How many people are dead? Is my question. But anyway, sometimes I feel like an oddball, and I don't feel like no man needs to be upset about nothing. You don't get excited about nothing. I had right here in Jacksonville, my oldest son, he lived around the corner, and with his mother. And I tell him, I said, "Boy, you come on around here." He won't come around here. He tell me there's too much justice around here. So he stay around there. But she called me, and she told me, that, you know, they're looking for your son. I said, "Who's looking for my son?" "The police." I said, "The police come to your house looking for my son?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Did he come in that house with a gun attached to him. She said, no, he didn't. I asked her three times. I said, I want you to tell me the truth. I said, don't lie to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mean to raise my voice, but I did. She said, I'm telling you the truth. I'm not lying to you. He didn't come in this house. I said, who was it? She said, he gave me his card. I said, give me the number. She gave me the number. I called him, and I asked him, he was telling me who he is and all that and who he represents. I ain't got no understanding about none of that. My only question was, did you go in that house with a gun attached to you over my grandchildren? He said, I did not enter the house. No, sir, I didn't enter the house. I said, okay, and I'll get the phone. That's the only question I needed to ask. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, who he was, what he represented, none of that. I don't need to know none of that. I just need to know what you did and where you at. That's all. So I think the brothers and the sisters, I think they don't have this attitude because they do not know who they are. They don't know what's inside of them. They don't know. They have no skill. They don't have any skill. They allow other people to come to them and try to talk to them about something.
Yeah.
They don't.
Right. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. I remember talking to my brother.
They have allowed their consciousness to be altered. I don't know about that. When I went to school, we was moved from an all so-called black school over to a predominantly Caucasian school in 1970, 71, and 72. And when I went over there on the first day of school, I didn't know nothing about no Caucasian people. I didn't really know nothing about that because of my whole... Everything that I knew was about my own people. This is where I went to school with. This is where I live. When I got out of school, I went to that neighborhood. This is all I knew. I didn't know nothing. There was a partition or a shield, but I did not know anything. All raised up, growing up, running up and down the dirt roads. This is all I knew. Just people look like me in my consciousness. That's all I knew. But on day one, me and my brothers, because I had two more brothers that went to school. First day of school, we were in the principal's office. He gave us our assignments. I had to go. My first class, by the time we got registered into the school and all that, was to go to the C-Wing, and I was supposed to go to the art class. They gave me a diagram, how to get there, because the building was new. I had to follow the diagram. I had to walk up the first flight of steps, go past the A wing, go past the B wing, and walking down a long walkway to go to the C wing. And I followed that to the letter, constantly looking at the map guiding me there. But when I got to the C wing, I reached my hand to open the door, because once I get in, I'm going to look at up top where the numbers are, because he had to circle the number to the place where I was supposed to go. And but when I reached to open the door swung open by itself, and a brother come running through there. He almost knocked me over. And I'm like, what is going on? And I'm standing there with my back turned watching this brother. All of a sudden, here comes this Caucasian behind him. And before I could turn around, he had done grabbed me and threw me up against the banister and told me, I got you now. I hit that man so hard, I brought brand new meaning to thunder and lightning. He dropped to his knees and blood splattered everywhere. He stumbled all the way over to the side where the bathroom was and ricocheted off the wall and fell back down on his knees again. He just said, oh my God. I said, back in them days there, I was kind of thick because all I did was pump iron, and me and the brothers would play football and fighting and what have you. He got back up. He said, "Look, I'm not gonna grab you anymore, but I need you to come go with me." I said, "Okay." I said, "But what you grab me for?" He said, "You stole a basketball out of the gymnasium." I said, "What?
Where the gymnasium? I don't even know where it at. What you talking about?"
He said, "Please come go with me." I said, "Okay." I went downstairs with that man. That man had blood. He was leaving puddles of blood all the way down to the principal office. And when he went to the principal office, the principal said, "Oh my God, what happened?" He said, I got this guy. He stole the basketball out of the gym." The principal said, "He couldn't have. He don't even know we got a gym. This is Mama right here. This is the other two brothers right here. What happened to you?" He said, "He hit me." I said, "Well, he grabbed me." I said, "He grabbed me and swung me up against the barrister, and I didn't know what was going on." I said, "I hit him. I hit him." He said, "Okay." He said, and he told him, he said, he it couldn't have been him. It had to be somebody else because this man just walked out of here. He said, "He got a paper in his hand." He said, the paper in his hand got your blood on it. He said, "You standing here bleeding all over my floor." He said, "Get out of here." He said, "Get on out of here." He said, I'm gonna go back up there with him." And he wanted me to sit down, and he took me back up to the class. And the whole while we was walking, we went the same route that I was coming down, and he was just fed his fan. "Oh, my God. Oh, my God." He said, "Oh, my God." Because he was looking at the blood. He followed the blood all the way up to the third floor, and he see the big puddle of blood all over there by the bathroom door. He said, "What did you hit him with?" I said, "I didn't hit him with nothing but my hand." He said, "Glad day, are you a boxer?" I said, "I can be one when I need to be." From that day on, I was branded inside the school. They were like watching me like a hawk. But I was not violent. I didn't know nothing about being violent toward someone who didn't look like me. I feel like the only thing that I knew was that I was supposed to do right. I knew the difference between right and wrong. I knew the difference between if you done something to me that was wrong, it wasn't right. That's all. It didn't have nothing to do with black and white. We learned to know people of the opposite race. We didn't deal with none of that. So what do you think now? Now, this how damaging is it for us to have somebody else's consciousness in our brain? In your opinion,
it's really damaging because we walk around as if we are them, and it'll never be. You know, we, like I said, we're to the point where we're relaxing our hair and coloring our hair and weaving our hair up to the point where it's killing us, literally. And we don't have enough sense to know to stop. And I find it very, very interesting that, you know, during Black History Month, they always promote Madam C.J. Walker. Oh, she was the first black millionaire in the United States, first black woman millionaire in the United States, self-made millionaire. Okay, but let's dig a little deeper. Why did she create those products to make her hair straight? Because her daughter was ashamed that her hair was nappy, and she overheard her say it. And so she came up with these chemicals, so to speak, to straighten her hair, to make it look more European. And then she started going all over the country, showing all the black people how to make their hair look straight. And I'm not knocking what she did as a black woman. What I'm saying is we have to know the foundation of what we're following. We just follow things blindly. We follow things blindly. We vote Democratic because our grandparents and our great-grandparents were Democrats. But what have the Democrats done?
Well, what is a Democrat in the first place?
Republican. They're the same, one and the same. They're one and the same. I mean, really, you tell somebody, if I say to someone, well, I'm a vegetarian, you know, and I don't eat any meat, and, you know, no, I don't go to church, and no, I ain't no Muslim, and no, I'm not, well, what are you? They have to put you in a box to understand you. You just can't be, like you said, the oddball. You have to be a part of the norm, which is not normal at all.
Okay.
And so we're literally killing ourselves trying to keep up with what Caucasians tell us we should do. We move next door to them and wonder why we got a swastika on our front door when we wake up. We wonder why the boy's nose is bleeding every time he comes home from school because he's been called the N-word all day, and the stress of it is making his nose bleed. But we live next door to them, and we can afford these private schools.
I had a Caucasian gentleman used to live next door to me, and I personally feel like the only reason that he's still living is, if he is because he couldn't read. And I knew that. His wife told me that he could not read. Now, when it came to dealing with a car, he could take a car apart, put it back together, inside out. That boy could do that, but he couldn't read. And I remember one day, and I had told him, because I used to call myself selling fish, and I was in my front yard and used to set up my little deep fried stuff, and people come from all over the neighborhood to buy my fish because I had fresh fish and I had a special batter, special seasoning, and they loved my fish dinner. But what he would do, he'd come over and put them on riding cars, only go to raise in the motor, and a big old cloud of smoke would come over there where I was and just permeate my whole area. And I told him, I said, don't do that. No more. Don't do that no more. And he did it again. But this time, I came out of the house, he saw me coming. He jumped in the truck, backed it out, I jumped in my truck. We were bumming up Bubba, riding down. I was trying to draw a good bead on him. But he swung over onto another street. Almost turned his truck over, almost turned mine over right on his butt. We went down Main Street. We were jumping back and forth across the medium. The car was jumping up in the air. The truck was jumping up in the air at least 4 feet high. So I was trying to get him. I didn't fire any shots, but I was trying to stop the truck.
Mm-hmm.
But we tore it up that day. And when he messed around, I spent all the way around in 360 degrees trying to turn back around to go to, but then he got away. And when he got away, he stayed away for almost 3 weeks. I didn't see him no more. Wow. His wife come out there begging me. I said, what you going to do when you got butter? I said, I didn't say it. Where he at? I said, what I was going to do. I didn't even know where he at. I don't know where he at. I said, well, don't ask me no more questions. Because that's the only question I got. Where he at? But finally, he came back. He come back, and he apologized. Talking outside loud. I had all the lights out of the house, so I just wanted to see him. But I ain't never seen him. He was in the dark. I couldn't see him. He would not come out where I could see him so that we can get the matter settled permanently. He would never come out. But anyway, that went away. And then somebody stole the gate off of my fence. And when they did that, I didn't call the police. He did. He called the police because he didn't like the idea that I was coming out there and I was looking around and I was looking over there at him because he had a dog. And the dog barked anytime somebody come by. But the morning I woke up, I hear the dog barking. So that tells me that he was the one that did this. He called the police. The police came to ask me what happened. I said, somebody stole the gate off my fence. He said, you know what did? I said, yeah, I know what did. I said, him, next door. He did. And the first thing the cops started trying to tell me, well, you know, Jesus said that we supposed to, you know, love our neighbor. I said, look here, man. I said, I don't want to hear nothing about Jesus. I said, you believe in Jesus. I said, I didn't call you. He did. I just want him to come outside the house. I said, I've been waiting on him for a week. He came outside. Well, killing somebody ain't going to hurt. Jesus said, I said, look, man, don't tell me nothing about no Jesus. Them police sent out across the street from this house and changing shifts and guards and everything for a month until this settles down. Until I just finally, the whole while it's over there, he people sticking his head out his door. But I ain't care nothing about them. I just want to come on out there. I don't care about them over there. Because I don't have that kind of fear and stuff. I don't have that in me. It ain't in me. I wasn't born with it. But anyway, so we are talking about relationships tonight.
Yes, we are.
And I want to get to the root and cause. And so far, what we've been discussing here tonight is very important for us to understand in regards to these relationships. Now, I have a couple of plugs to run, and one of them is by Sister Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing.
Yes.
That's my girl.
I love her. Yeah, I love her.
Okay. All right. Well, we can take a little quick break, and when we come back, then we can get down into the nitty-gritty about these relationships between the sisters and brothers. So I need you to hold on a moment. Okay?
All right. Yes.
All right. With the great honor of introducing our esteemed scholar, teacher, and healer, Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing. As some of you may know, Dr. Welsing is a behavioral scientist and psychiatrist who has practiced in the D.C. area for the last 50 years. One of her most widely recognized works, known as the Crest Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, developed in the late 1960s, revolutionized the way we conceptualize racism and white supremacy. Through this theory, Dr. Welsing provided a framework by which we could describe and explain the pathological behavior and actions that have been perpetrated against us as a people, and help us to understand how racism and white supremacy manifests itself in our area of people activity. And Dr. Welsing's infamous book, The ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Color, which she has on sale here this evening as well, and she will be signing. She not only offers techniques by which to decode racism and white supremacy, but she also covers an enduring problem among us, the crisis in black male-female relationships. Today, Dr. Welsing will outline for you what has caused the crisis in our relationships and provide tools on how to repair our relationships. We ask that you open your minds and really digest the valuable education that Dr. Welsing has come to impart upon us today. As with all the lectures, you should come away with more than what you came here with. So,
black is a genetically dominant trait. And the darker you are, the more genetic power you have to produce this pigment. So the next thing we were taught, if you're black with a whole lot, get back. A little bit less if you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. And if you're white, no pigment, you're all right. Now see, black people and people of color all over the world, I can go to London, England and say this, and everybody knows, if you're black, you're back, brown, stick around, yellow, mellow, white, right, because under white domination, and under white supremacy, they taught us this by their behavior towards us.
Yes. Yes.
And programmed us
yes.
to behave in that way in relationship to each other.
That's right.
And to begin to worship the fact that the grandmothers were raped.
Mm.
Are you all with me?
Yes. Yes.
Now, this is not for anybody to feel bad, but all of this instruction is based on maintaining this system of racism, white supremacy. And we need to understand that if I had Oprah Winfrey's money, I would get all of the crystal black people. And every year there would be a parade of the blackest people parading their beauty. In the visual head of racism, white supremacy, because we have little children. I don't know what CNN and Anderson Cooper and the whole program's about race, but they have little white children at age 3 looking at a strip of faces of different colors. And when asked which child is bad, and a 3-year-old white child points immediately to the darkest face. Which one is ugly? The child points immediately. Which one is the one you don't want to be friends with? Points immediately to black. And the great tragedy is that when they ask little black children, little beautiful black children, they're doing the exact same thing. Which one is ugly? Now the black child hesitates. But then points to the darkest color. Which one is dumb, which one is bad, which one is ugly. And one little black child said, the color is nasty.
Oh, wow.
Now see, we can't blame the children. Where do the children learn? The children learn when they turn on TV. They learn in the home. They learn in any book that they look at. They learn the lesson of racism, white supremacy, just like they learn English if that's spoken, or French if that's spoken, or whatever other language. They learn it. These colors lined up and spoken of in this way are essential for white genetic survival.
Yep.
See, in other words, destroy the black. If you look at the people who are incarcerated, they're people at the darker end of the spectrum. Now, this is critical. We can't have mental health unless we understand this. But do you think that anybody in psychiatry, the American Psychiatric Association, do you think they're teaching this? Absolutely no. If anything, they will say, it's no such thing as racism. See, the denial of racism is essential to the survival of racism. The denial of racism on the part of people who classify themselves as white, and the denial of racism on the part of people who are non-white all over this planet. The 9/10 global majority of non-white people are all trying to, you know, all many, many, many are trying to bleach their skin, trying to make themselves white. I have a sister who teaches in a school in Chicago, and she says, a little child, I'm not black, I'm mixed race. Where did the child learn it? The child is not informed. Where did the child learn it? We're the only group of people when we have to fill out the census. It takes us about an hour. Which now, the white people just quickly white out. We have to labor. Oh, I think I have a German relative. I think I got a Spanish or I'm not really all black. You know, Brother Henry Louis Gates.
Oh, yes.
I got it out in me.
Truth.
He's busy talking about, I'm mostly European. But how does this affect the black male-female relationship?
Devastation.
It affects the relationship in this way. This whole system of racism, the goal objective is white genetic survival on this planet. White genetic survival. Now, a lot of people say, oh, no, it's all about economics. No, they use these areas of activity to make certain that there's white genetic survival. They make the money and use the money and dispense the money for the purpose of the system. The same is the distribution of education for the maintenance of the system of their survival. All over Europe today, when they talk about Islam and checkmating immigration, they are really talking about the flood of non-white people coming into Europe from Africa and causing what? White genetic annihilation. You see, now mind you, they say they're going to do something about it. And how many people remember the case of the Norwegian man who killed nearly 70 people? And these were children of African and Asian ancestry who were in Norway. And he killed them because they were causing potentially white genetic annihilation. Now, they gave him a pass and said he had psychological problems. But he planned it well. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. And he carried it out. I say he wasn't mentally ill. He was engaging in white genetic survival by whatever necessary means. See, I say that standing your ground.
Yeah.
Standing your ground, that means that, see, don't any black person attempt standing your ground. Now, black people can engage in standing their ground when they are killing other black people.
Yeah.
Because that is assisting white genetic survival,
yeah,
by the destruction of black men.
That's right.
So that's, you can get a pass with that. But don't start thinking you're afraid of a police officer and you're going to stand your ground. Do you see? Or that Trayvon could have stood his ground because he was afraid. No, those are the laws that are being put in place. It's just like when President Barack Obama became president. They had what they call the Obama effect. Now, the Obama effect was people buying more guns than had ever been bought at one time. Because just the very idea of a black man being in the White House was perceived as a threat. Just like the Republicans said, they didn't say we've got another plan to save the country. They said we have to make this black man fail. Our energy is going to be directed and focused because he is a black man.
Right.
Now let's go back about the relationship. Black females are not a threat to white genetic survival. Now we have all the genetic material in our ovaries, but women can entice, but they cannot impose sexual intercourse. In other words, imagine you reaching and pulling out your M16 rifle and saying to the man, you are going to have sexual intercourse. Now, gentlemen, what will happen? See, that's just physiology 101. The erection cannot be maintained in the presence of fear. Now, the Creator made it that way so you won't have a conflict. If you get afraid, you've got to exit. So the focus is on the black male. In other words, racism, white supremacy attacks us as a total people for the purpose of white genetic survival. But the intense focus is on males because they can impose sexual intercourse. Now, all the different colors that we come in, most black families don't have two people that are the same color. Everybody's a different shade, and then that causes warfare in the family. Who's lightest? Who looks the most white? Speaking from my own family situation, everybody has color shade conflict. And it's not only in this area of the world, it's all over South America, all over Central America, all over India.
Yes, everywhere.
See, who's dark and who's not dark? Who looks most white? And fight amongst yourselves. It's called divide and conquer. But all of those colors are because of the activity of white male oppressors and white slave masters. You see, it wasn't Sally Hemings in love with Thomas Jefferson. Let's get that straight. See, that would be an absolute insult talking about the slave loves the master when the master won't free the slaves or the slaves' children. That's a fantasy. No, there was non-stop rape and sexual abuse on the plantations. See, I heard a white female talking about the plantation in her family, and she was saying that the slave masters would have relationships with the African women to make more slaves. Well, I guess that's part of it, aside from maybe whatever they might have enjoyed. But let's look at how this plays out, you see, because the system of racism is sane, and this is where I went in the ISIS papers into a discussion of the phrase motherfucker. See, this is a phrase that used to be said over and over again in the system of racism, white supremacy amongst black people. I remember coming out of a clinic in Washington, D.C., and I'm coming down the stairs and some young people were passing. And the young people were, motherfucker, this motherfucker, motherfucker, motherfucker. So I said to myself, my first thought was, why are the children talking like this? My second thought was, any phrase that is used with high frequency must have significance.
Yes.
Now, because I understood at that point the system of racism, white supremacy, I said, this language is specific to this system. Now, what does it mean? And then my brain computer just went through. So there are five people categories: man, woman, boy, girl, baby. That covers everybody. Who is the man? If I said, here comes a man, you all, my dad was alive, you wouldn't expect to see him. Who is the man? Speak up, class.
The white man.
That means the only man on the scene. Any other male has four choices: woman, boy, girl, baby. Some time ago, woman and girl was out. Some time ago. Okay, I said woman and girl was out. Black men died, many of them. Don't call me no boy. So the white people said, fine, you got two choices. I mean, you got one choice left. Baby. Mm-hmm. Are you all with me?
Yes.
Come on, because we're getting free.
Okay, Lisa, we're back. Are you still with me, sister?
I am still here.
Okay, now, here comes my question.
Uh-huh.
How has this, the relationships between brothers and sisters inside the United States, in your opinion?
Well, nothing much has changed except the chains are removed. The behavior, I mean, okay, let's look at it from what Dr. Wilson was talking about on the slave plantation. They had these,
okay,
what they called these things breeding farms, right?
Uh-huh.
And they would have one man father children with maybe 15 to 20 women. One of the stipulations of a mother being free from slavery is if she had 22 children. If she could have 22 children, she could have her freedom. This was the norm. So you start with men sleeping around with this woman, that woman, this woman, and we're still doing it. This woman, that woman, this woman. So now today it's this woman, that man. Now, you have these women on the plantation that's being raped, that's being shared with other men, and you still have it. You still have it. And I think what a lot of things that's going on is this, Brother Taharka. We don't want to deal with the pain. We don't want to deal with the pain. I see it very often where sisters will be in a relationship with a guy, they break up with this guy, and instead of taking some time to heal from that relationship and learn why the relationship fell, they go right to the next guy. And now they have that baggage from that relationship in this relationship and wonder why this relationship isn't working. We have to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, what am I bringing to the table in these relationships? But what Dr. Welfing talked about is still happening. We haven't dealt with the pain. We haven't dealt with the programming. We haven't dealt with the self-hate. And it's all embedded in racism. It's the bottom line.
Well, I have to agree with you 100%. But I keep viewing myself as an oddity. Sometimes I feel like a dinosaur. I be walking through the streets, I ride, and I go where I go. I don't bother anybody.
and nobody bothers with me. But when I run into situation when I see brothers and sisters in a relationship, and I see the sometimes they have arguments and sometimes they have debates, and to me, what it tells me is there's something wrong in their consciousness, to me. And because I'm a firm believer that if you know who you are and you have extensive knowledge about your own self and about your ancient culture, because a lot of us are under the impression that slavery is our history, and that's it.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's sorry. Yes. I agree. It's encouraging.
I had to tell a cop that. This cop, they pulled me over, and that was during the time I was exercising my freedom of right to travel, and I found out that I had a right to travel, and when it was a Caucasian cop and it was a brother in the car, and they pulled me over, and he asked me for identification, and I gave him the book that I had with the information that I had gathered on my identity, and I gave it to him, and he took it and put it in the car, and the brother started looking through it, and he got out of the car. He said, "Hey, man," he said, "please come here a minute." He said, "What is this? Explain this to me." I said, "That's you asked me for identification." I said, "He asked me for identification. I gave you identification." He said, "But I ain't never seen nothing like this." I said, "Well, that has everything to do with me and your identity." I said, "That guy right there that you riding with, I said, he doesn't have a history. He stole your one." And he looked at me in total amazed wonderment. He said, "Do you have any more information on this?" I said, "Yes, I do." I said, "In fact, I got it sitting right in my truck on DVD. Would you like a copy?" He said, "Yeah." I went and got a copy. And I gave him a copy. And I asked the Caucasian sitting next to him in the car, "Do you want a copy?" He said, "I don't want nothing from you." And by then, we got about four or five more cops that pull up on the scene. I said, "Do y'all need a copy?" They said, "No, we don't want no copy." I said, "Okay, you don't have to have a copy." I said, "But this officer here, this policeman," because he wasn't an officer, "this policeman, he wanted to know about my identity." And so I give him a copy. I said, "If you want a copy," I said, "you can have it too." He said, "We don't want no copy." I said, "Okay, ain't no problem." So I went back, and after I gave it to him, and he was shocked because he was not accustomed to a man that looked like me and him knowing who he was and what he had a right to do and what he had a right not to do. And I told him, I said, you all your life you've been taught that the Indians are the natives of the land, and they are native here. I said, but the original people and the first people on this land are us. I said, the United Nations, they make no mistake when they say the people in Louisiana are the oldest people on the planet, predating the ancient royal dynasties of ancient Egypt, or what they call Egypt, no such place, but ancient Kemet. And so I began to explain that to him. This changed everything. This is a whole new. I believe that turned their day in a 360-degree angle in the opposite direction when they got hold of that. But it is very important for us to know who we are. And if you know who you are, you got it firmly fixed in your mind, you won't be going through all of this stuff. You know, any woman that I date, if you'll be able to tell that they are a woman that I date because they got their own hair on their head. If you say, is this a woman? You don't have to ask that question. Now you do look at her head and say, oh, yeah, that's his woman.
Uh-huh.
Right there. I said, oh, yeah. That's his woman, too. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, they all got it.
You know, Brother Taharka, I thought about your question again, and the way we relate to one another, black men and women, just on the level of the hatred that black men are feeling towards black women is very interesting. Here in Pittsburgh, it may have been a year ago or so, there was a young lady that was a jitney driver. It's a cab here in Pittsburgh, but it's an illegal cab. But they service the areas that white cabs won't go to, so they're called jitney drivers.
Okay.
And
right.
There were two black men that got in the car with her to rob her. This is a little small woman, huge black men, right? All they had to do was say, stick it up, give me your money. Even if they wanted to be violent with her, all they had to do was hit her or push her to the ground. This brother shot this sister's face off with a shotgun.
Oh, my God.
And said, oh, it went off by accident. The police had to identify her by her sneakers. And you see it more often than not. You see black men killing black women all the time. I mean, it's just like so common anymore. And, you know, we used to be able to differentiate what crime was related to what group of people. But now we've been around Caucasian so long, you have to wait and see who comes across the television.
Mm-hmm.
Because the behaviors are being assimilated. And it's coming out on all levels, especially in relationships.
Okay, now, I have to agree with you. And once again, I have to stress the importance of us knowing who we are.
I agree with that.
I had a situation here in Florida where a brother, and it just so happened that the brothers, this brother, I knew his older brother. His older brother is a lawyer. But I managed a Jamaican restaurant for here in Florida for over 3 years. And this guy here used to come in and eat in the restaurant. However, I did not know that he had another brother that was doing all kind of crazy stuff. He was in prison and selling dope and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But he and I had an altercation. He wanted to beat me up. Want to fight, and I ain't one to try to fight my brother. Been there, did that. Beat the police son right in front of his face until he jumped in and stopped me from beating him. But I changed, and I don't like fighting brothers. I don't like war, period. I hate war. I hate it. But I'm good at it. But anyway, this brother here, brother, he out there, he on dope. And he doesn't like the idea that his girlfriend goes to this park where they drink and smoke and play music and all that. He don't like her to be there. And at the same time, he does not like the idea that she is very fond of me. As a man, we never went to bed together, never came up about none of that. You know, I was just the guy that used to be across the street because my friend across the street used to have a pool table, and I go over there, and there don't be nothing over there but men. And we shoot pool and all night long. We had a real pool table in this garage, and they cut the light on, and we drink beer, we listen to music, and this is where we are. But she and her girlfriends like to come over there because this is where the men were. And but he found out that she like me. I don't know what they said to one another behind closed doors, but then he wants to jump on me. And I said, okay, so now I have to run from to keep from hurting this brother because I ain't about this. I run first. And I ran into his brother, and I told him, I said, man, and this idiot called my house and left a threatening message on my phone, and I recorded it. And when I seen his brother come to the barber shop where we get our haircuts together, I said, man, you, and this is the lawyer. I said, brother, let me, what's going on with your brother, man? I said, what's happening? He said, well, which one? I said, Pop. He said, oh, Lord, what Pop done now? I said, there you go. And I let him listen to it. He said, that's Pop? I said, listen. He said, that's Pop. I said, now, this is what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to put out a restraining order on it because I ain't going to shoot Pop. I said, but I need you to go and talk to Pop and get Pop to stop this stuff. I said, now, this isn't what we listening to. I said, I ain't canning in the courtroom. He said, man, I sure appreciate it because that's the most damning evidence I ever heard. I said, yeah. I said, but we going down there. He said, I'm going to be there. I said, all right. So we get in the courtroom. He saw me sitting there. And he come over, he said, he won't shake my hand. I said, okay, partner, let's ride. And the judge get up, and the judge say, well, we're going to rule against this restraining order because you only got threatened one time. You didn't get threatened more than one time. I said, okay, no problem. And he run his stupid butt out the courthouse and on the phone with somebody talking about, yeah, I beat him. I beat him in the courtroom. I beat him. I got him in my car and backed up and went on by my business. And then the idiot, I'm riding down the road. He see me. He go pull over the top of his truck like he going in the truck to get a gun. And I'm right in it like I'm supposed to be stupid. He already a felon. He ain't got no gun. So I said, Lord have mercy. I said, what I need to do? I said, I'm going to take Pop, and I'm going to beat his butt and call his brother a lawyer and try to come down to you, Pop, up off the street. But I think our problem is, and we have to understand the magnitude of the situation that we have. Our problem is, the bottom line is a lack of knowledge of self and a loss of true identity of self. That's that's the bottom line. And it goes.
I would agree with that, Brother Tark. I would definitely agree with that. And that's one of my main motivators with my curriculum. But here's the thing. When I learn about who I am, it's a continuous learning experience. There is so much knowledge on our ancestors, from Kemet on, just the fact that the accomplishments of those tombs and those temples and those pyramids and agriculture and smelting, and I mean, you can go on and on. Science, astrology, mathematics, writing. The information is so vast that, like Dr. Wilson said, if they let us know, if they opened up what we know as a people, who we are as a people, it will be all over for them. It will be all over for them. And they use that term minority when they're the true minority in the world.
Yeah.
People of color.
What would you do? Let's put ourselves in their shoes. What would you do if you found out?
Mm-hmm.
They ain't got no, in my opinion, because I know as early as 1977. And these are the statistics that I got, that people of Caucasian descent on this planet were at zero population growth in the face of people of color worldwide. Is that, that is one of the biggest threats that I've ever seen in my life. You had zero population growth in the face of people of color on Earth as a race? My God. So not saying that that's the stuff we need to help somebody with. Not in, in my opinion, because the first law of nature is self-preservation. You got to reserve self. And I know that my people have a hard time with that. We got this thing going inside our brain where we have to love everybody. We God told us to love everybody. Well, my question is, what God told you that? Why is it that all people on the planet, every race of people on the planet, connect with their own culture and have love and connection to their own self? But here you come, the most underprivileged person on the planet, the most Then you talking about you trying to love everybody, and you ain't loving everybody in your house first before you go out and make a save the world. Have you made up your bed? That's what the first thing that we need to understand. What is it about us? If you say religion, okay, I need to know what religion are you referring to, and when did it originate from my people? Show me that. And if you can, if we understand that the first thing we need to do before we get into finances, before we get married, before we talk about holding relationships, before we talk about investing, the first thing that we need to be concerned about is taking the time to invest in knowledge of self. Because if you do that, in my opinion, the fears that you have, that will go away. You replace that with skill. That's the end of that. Living them kind of fears. You can put up a warning that you have up, you can enforce. I don't need a sign on my gate to say, damn the dog, beware the owner. I don't need that on that. All I need to do is do right by people. That's all I need to do. But at the same time, always be prepared for some idiot that will come along that have no knowledge of self and could cause you some harm. It doesn't matter what color they are. But as far as the relationships that we have, I think that is one thing, a lack of knowledge of self, that has injured us in a way that we can't even imagine. We have to stop and gain knowledge of self. Otherwise, in my opinion, you have no strength. You have no power.
I agree with you on that. I would have to agree with that.
Well, what about the, now, let's take a look at, now, are you married?
Yes.
Okay. Now,
I'm married.
In the relationship of marriage, do you think that it is vital for you and your husband to be on the same page as far as doing an investigation and coming up to a conclusion about your knowledge of self? How important is that to you?
I think it's very important. But let me say this, Brother Tarka, every relationship is different. My godparents have been married 44 years, and the way that they relate to each other, I would not talk to my husband that way, and he would not talk to me that way, but that's their way. But I think knowledge of self is very important. I think that both folks in a relationship, both people in a relationship should have and or be on that path together. Maybe one may be more advanced than the other, but as long as they're sharing that information and growing together, I think that it gives the relationship a lot more solidarity and understanding, because you have to be able to relate with your spouse, not just on a physical or sexual or, you know, touchy-feely level, but on a mental and ancestral level. You have to know, both people have to know where they've come from in order to know where they're going. And if one doesn't have that knowledge and the other does, if that one is not willing to learn, then that one's going to be left behind.
Okay. Well, I have to agree with you. But I always learn that in order for a marriage to survive, you're mm-hmm. going to have to understand the importance of each other.
Yeah.
You'll need to know how. My question is, what I have to say is, you're going to have to answer the question of how valuable are you?
How valuable are you in the relationship, or just as a whole, on a whole, as a person, as a human person? Brother Taharka, can you hear me?
For my tooth when it aches, like a handyman, you fix my heart when it breaks. There are things that I haven't got. So many things, baby, that I need a lot. When I don't understand, my ace in the hole, you my bird in the hand. My lucky brain. And your love, oh Lord, your
when a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
We're just giving you the general slave profile so that you have some idea what we're talking about. You know, you need to be able to look in the mirror and know what you're doing, but you also need to be able to look around you at the other slaves and recognize, you know, where they are too. A lot of what I talk about sometimes people say is not relevant anymore because things have changed. But you must remember that change doesn't necessarily mean better. Change just means different. And things are different. We are in the worse condition now than we have ever been in 439 years. You know. So let me just give you a few of these, and I'm going to just move through this quickly because we want to get to Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Martin, who have a very important message to bring us. Refers to other black people as you guys instead of sister and brother. You know, we used to just call each other sister and brother, but as the white people have taught us more and more this personal independence, we don't want to say no words to each other that might suggest that we are connected or that we have any kind of family relationship. And so everywhere I go, all over the country, everywhere I am when I'm around black women and black men, what you fellas gonna do? Where are the guys? And I wanna, what are you talking about? You know, and before they call me Sister Sharazade or Sister Ali, they'll say, lady, you know, they don't want no connection. That's what a slave do. Slaves want to be depersonalized. Slaves don't think about nobody but self. Slaves selfish, trying to survive and think it can't act like it got no relatives. You know, that's what a slave does. The slave also wears brand name clothes so that the designer's name is clearly visible. Now, that's a bad problem y'all know we have. You can't look at a black man on TV. He got Nike on his head. He got Reebok on his chest. He got something else on his feet. You know, I'm so tired of y'all being slavery time, walking advertisement. If you're going to put somebody's name on, put your own name on. You know, stop wearing everybody else's name. Stop acting like a slave on a plantation. White people brag about how cheap they got something. They got y'all tricked up. Y'all brag about how much you paid for it. How much money you gave them. As a sister explained, the markup on clothing and garments is 40, 50, sometimes 75,000%. We can't afford it. We ain't making no clothes. You know? So, you know, that's something else we need to do. And, of course, refusing to call blacks by their African or Egyptian name. We say we can't say it, you know, so we try to not call people by that. We want to keep the name that we have inherited from the slave masters. Now, that's really a slave. If you just think about, as I have said before, you never find a Jew that'll name their child Adolf Hitler. So why are you still naming yours Bridget and Amy and Shirley? You know, that doesn't make any sense. Don't you see that the first stigma of slavery is that they took our name and our God? We can't say it didn't matter. If it didn't matter, they wouldn't have did it. Everything they did mattered. So when you want to hold on to the name of Johnson because your father's name was Johnson and his father was, and then some slave master behind him somewhere was named Johnson, think about that. It's no insult to your parents. They had a slave name too. So did mine. That's not disrespecting them because they were slaves too. You need your own name. And if you don't want your own name, you acting like a slave. If you're satisfied with your American, European, Gentile name, then you're acting like a slave. That's another thing that we need a re-education on. Buy cards and gifts to celebrate every European holiday. Stop doing that. You know? Every holiday the white people got, black people running in the store, Valentine's Day, Easter, Halloween, y'all coming out with a sack. You know? None of them holidays, you know, got anything on it even remotely about us. Martin Luther King, that ain't really no holiday. The white people didn't even like him till he died. They don't like nobody till they dead. Ain't no problem no more. You know? So stop giving them money for every holiday. Express your love to your loved one on some time or some date that you pick out. You don't have to worry about being romantic. You're not the Romans. You can't be romantic. You know? A whole lot of what we try to be, it's not even in us. We're trying to mimic them. So don't be, you know, that kind of a slave. Okay, promote their children to participate in integrated activities. Stop teaching your children to get along with white people before they get along with black people. Okay. Now, this is the real slave, and I see this from L.A. to New York. Wears dreads, braids, or African clothes, and has a white maid on their arm. Okay. That's still going on. That's still going on. In fact, most of the people is getting so in the big cities that you see dressed like that. They got a white person somewhere. And then when I show up, they try to act like I'm embarrassed. You know, like my ideas are so ancient, like in the TV studios backstage, you all don't have any idea what's going on. It's a riot. You know, they all try to act like they're ashamed of me. I treat the white people so bad. I make everybody do their job, do this. I just be on them. And then the black people, they be acting scared. They be acting like I'm embarrassing them. You know? And another mark of a slave is a person that delights, loves to move into a neighborhood with all whites, trying to get away from the rest of us. Okay. And certainly a mark of a slave is a person that insists on eating pork no matter what they have learned about it. Buys black children white dolls and books featuring white characters. All those symbols mean something. Don't let your children know what white people look like before they know what black people look like. Let them learn about self. If you teach them about the slave master first, then you acted like a slave. Becomes happy and animated when talking to white people. We see that all the time. You know, some of us can't hardly talk at all, but you let somebody white start asking us a question. You see all the teeth, give up all the directions. I see it all the time. I hate that. I was on an elevator in Chicago, and I was just standing there with the bellhop, and I was standing there while two white men got on the elevator. And I was, you know how you do to keep from looking at everybody. I was looking at the numbers go across. I was up on like the 18th, 19th floor. Anyway, the devil over here to my left say, are you here for a conference? And I said, no. And I was so mad at myself. I answered automatically. And I said, none of your business what I'm here for. And then I turned my head back around. You know, because I got mad. I was angry. And I recognized that when that white man opened his mouth, I said, what is it? You know. You know, so it can happen to anybody. That's my point. And I know I'm conscious on it. So I just turned around and said, none of your business what I'm here for. You know, I ain't the information bureau. You know, I don't have to answer, you know, I ain't got to answer no questions. You don't have to do anything. And that's just, as I said, that's not to be hostile. I still ask me, well, how do I get along with them on my job if I don't laugh at their jokes? I say, well, if it's not in your job description, I say, then you just need to go with a lot. Just do your job, and if they mess up, sue them. You know, but they make that a requirement that we have to laugh at their jokes. And all adult black women know, you know, the frustration of having to be around some white men that's saying something, you know, that's offhand. You know, I won't even, you know, I have to deal with it. I won't even ride in the white limousine car because I'm not riding no 2 or 3 hours with no white man in no closed-up car. So I had to have a black driver. And they came and asked me the other day. I felt really bad. The people came out and they needed to make pictures. They were taking pictures for a promotion we're doing. And the white woman called me and asked me, was it all right if she sent a white photographer? And I thought, boy, they really think I'm racist. You know? So, of course, I told her, no, I need a black photographer because I don't think it does. Because every time I travel and say I don't want to be bothered with no white people, then they have to go hire and round up a bunch of black people to come and deal with me. And I have reached a point, where I can have things pretty much like I want to have them. And so that means I can ask for what I want. And if they say no, I can say, well, okay, I ain't coming. You know, so, you know, I've been blessed in that way. Now, the other way that we act like a slave, I got 5 more minutes. Let me tell you this. The other way that we act like a slave is that we make our little children, one of the first things we do is they're growing up, when they get to be 2 or 3 years old and we bring company in, we say, get up and dance. Show them you can dance. Watch them dance. That's from slavery. You know, they used to make us dance, make all the people dance. And so we still do that. When we have a baby, the first thing it can do, we call somebody in and we'll fight that child if it won't dance for the company. We'll beat that child. You better dance. That's from slavery. Being greedy. You know, we got a reputation across the country. If we go somewhere to a buffet or eat all you can or eat all you want, we clean them out. You know? We take food home in our pocket, our pocketbook. You know, that's from slavery. It's a slave reaction of being deprived of food and having to sneak and hide and hoard food. So don't go out. If you're going to go to the white people restaurant, then don't go in there acting like an abject slave. Don't do that to yourself. Not that we got no image to protect in front of them because they already know our condition. So I don't have nothing to hide from them. I'll be wide open with them. Because they already know what condition I'm in. Yeah, and I'm mad about it. You know, and that's the same, that, you know, that goes with the being overly attracted to fine clothes, stealing paper clips and stuff on the job, stuff you ain't never going to need at home. Come home with a box of staples. They don't do that. That's a slave behavior. You know, work at the hospital, bring home a crate of cotton balls. Don't do that. Anything. During slavery, we had to steal. We had to use pilfers. We had to get any little thing we could. And so today, we still do that. We can't help it. If we're there, we'll get it. You know, don't do that. Don't act like a slave. You know, don't do it. You know, and it takes some control because it's like an automatic reaction because it's so deep in us, you know. But, you know, try not to do that, you know. White people gave the Indians alcohol. They gave the black people drugs. So we have to be careful. We know that they have substances that they will give us to try to destroy us. And we can talk about the violence on the TV and all of that, but they don't know why people come in our house and cut the TV on. We cut the TV on in our house. And we can cut it off. You know, so every time we decide, you know, to do a lot of these kind of basic things that we got from slavery, just don't act like a slave. I want to leave you with that thought. Stop acting like a slave. Find out what the behavior of a slave is and stop doing that. It is one of the reasons we cannot make progress because they put some things in motion that even without a slave master, we still acting like a slave. All right? Bye, Slum Lego.
freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself.
But you see, it wasn't easy for me this time, for me to just slip away. She wanted a little of my time, and that's why I had to stay. When you're out here stealing love like we are, that's the price you sometimes pay. So here's the key, you know the floor. It's the same old room we've used many times before. Put the do not disturb sign on the door. We're gonna make sweet, sweet love, baby. Room 244. Hear me.
again, y'all. Please tell me I'm dreaming this. Baby, why? Why, baby?
Girl, I really thought I had you in the palm of my hand. So I gave you money, I even gave my love. I turned against all my friends, 'cause I thought they wanted you to. Oh baby, what a fool, what a fool I've been. But thinking you were mine all by myself, double cross, you wasn't no good, but oh, like a fool, I thought they wanted you to. But after seeing you for myself, there ain't nothing you can say, because you made me think I was your only man. Got me so upset, I think I'm going out of my mind. Double cross, two timers, heartbreaking, backstabber. You don't deserve it. The diamond rings I put on your finger, give it back to me. You don't deserve it. Double cross, you got me hurting now. After being so good to you, how could you do this to me? Double cross, backstabber. You messed up my good name, baby. Double cross, heartbreaker, baby. You know what you are, baby?
Played on me before, but the girl that played, she's not here anymore.
weaker men call themselves a jack. They fall in love and the fool never get back. From the 9 to the 10, just can't win. From the 8 to the 4, you're just too low. From the 2 to the 3, babe, you can't beat me. I'm the ace of spades, baby, you can't beat me. I love you from the bottom of my heart, I can't let you beat me. Oh, baby, I love you, but I can't let you beat me. You can go get your coat.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel.
doing a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Monayel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Monayel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Introducing our esteemed scholar, teacher, and healer, Dr. Francis Chris Welsing. As some of you may know, Dr. Welsing is a behavioral scientist and psychiatrist who has practiced in the D.C. area for the last 50 years. One of her most widely recognized works, known as the CREST Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, was developed in the late 1960s, revolutionized the way we conceptualize racism, white supremacy. Through this theory, Dr. Welsing provided a framework by which we could describe and explain the pathological behavior and actions that have been perpetrated against us as a people, and help us to understand how racism, white supremacy manifests itself in our area of people activity. Dr. Welsing's infamous book, The ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Color, which she has on sale here this evening as well, and she will be signing. She not only offers techniques by which to decode racism and white supremacy, but she also covers an enduring problem among us, the crisis in black male-female relationships. Today, Dr. Welsing will outline for you what has caused the crisis in our relationships and provide tools on how to repair our relationships. We ask that you open your minds and really digest the valuable education that Dr. Welsing has come to impart upon us today. As with all the lectures, you should come away with more than what you came here with. So,
black is a genetically dominant trait.
Right.
And the darker you are, the more genetic power you have to produce this pigment. So the next thing we were taught, if you're black with a whole lot, get back. A little bit less if you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. And if you're white, no pigment. You're all right. Now see, black people and people of color all over the world, I can go to London, England and say this, and everybody knows, if you're black, you're back, brown, stick around, yellow, mellow, white, right, because under white domination and under white supremacy, they taught us this by their behavior towards us.
Yes.
And programmed us.
Yes.
To behave in that way in relationship to each other.
That's right.
And to begin to worship the fact that the grandmothers were raped.
Mm.
Are you all with me?
Yes.
Now, this is not for anybody to feel bad, but all of this instruction is based on maintaining this system of racism, white supremacy. And we need to understand that if I had Oprah Winfrey's money, I would get all of the crystal black people. And every year there would be a parade of the blackest people parading their beauty. In the visual head of racism, white supremacy, because we have little children. I don't know what's the by race. But they have little white children at age 3 looking at a strip of faces of different colors. And when asked which child is bad, and a 3-year-old white child points immediately to the darkest face. Which one is ugly? The child points immediately. Which one is the one you don't want to be friends with? Points immediately to black. And the great tragedy is that when they ask little black children, little beautiful black children, they're doing the exact same thing. Which one is ugly? Now the black child hesitates, but then points to the darkest color. Which one is dumb? Which one is bad? Which one is ugly? And one little black child said, the color is nasty.
Wow.
Now see, we can't blame the children. Where do the children learn? The children learn when they turn on TV. They learn in the home. They learn at any book that they look at. They learn the lesson of racism, white supremacy, just like they learn English if that's spoken, or French if that's spoken, or whatever other language. They learn it. These colors lined up and spoken of in this way are essential for white genetic survival.
Yep.
See, in other words, destroy the black. If you look at the people who are incarcerated, they're people at the darker end of the spectrum. Now, this is critical. We can't have mental health unless we understand this. But do you think that anybody in psychiatry, the American Psychiatric Association, do you think they're teaching this? Absolutely no. If anything, they will say it's no such thing as racism. See, the denial of racism is essential to the survival of racism. The denial of racism on the part of people who classify themselves as white, and the denial of racism on the part of people who are non-white all over this planet. The 9/10 global majority of non-white people are all trying to, you know, all, many, many, many are trying to bleach their skin. Trying to make themselves white. I have a sister who teaches in a school in Chicago, and she says a little child, I'm not black. I'm mixed race. See, where did the child learn it? The child is not informed. Where did the child learn it? We're the only group of people when we have to fill out the census. It takes us about an hour. Which now the white people just quickly white out. We have to labor. Oh, I think I have a German relative. I think I got a Spanish or I'm not really all black. You know, Brother Henry Louis Gates.
Oh, yeah.
I got it out in me.
No, truth.
He's busy talking about, I'm mostly European. But how does this affect the black male-female relationship?
Devastation.
It affects the relationship in this way. This whole system of racism, the goal objective is white genetic survival on this planet. White genetic survival. Now, a lot of people say, oh, no, it's all about economics. No, they use these areas of activity make certain that there's white genetic survivors. They make the money and use the money and dispense the money for the purpose of the system. The same is the distribution of education for the maintenance of the system of their survival. All over Europe today, when they talk about Islam and checkmating into immigration, they are really talking about the flood of non-white people coming into Europe from Africa and causing what? White genetic annihilation. You see, now mind you, they say they're going to do something about it. And how many people remember the case of the Norwegian man who killed nearly 70 people? And these were children of African and Asian ancestry who were in Norway. And he killed them because they were causing potentially white genetic annihilation. Now, they gave him a pass and said he had psychological problems. But he planned it well. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he carried it out. I say he wasn't mentally ill. He was engaging in white genetic survival by whatever necessary means. See, I say that standing your ground.
Yeah.
Standing your ground, that means that, see, don't any black person attempt standing your ground. Now, black people can engage in standing their ground when they are killing other black people. Because that is assisting white genetic survival by the destruction of black men. So that's, you can get a pass with that. But don't start thinking you're afraid of a police officer and you're going to stand your ground. Do you see? Or that Trayvon could have stood his ground because he was afraid. No, those are the laws that are being put in place. It's just like when President Barack Obama became president. They had what they call the Obama effect. Now, the Obama effect was people buying more guns than had ever been bought at one time. Because just the very idea of a black man being in the White House was perceived as a threat. Just like the Republicans said, they didn't say we've got another plan to save the country. They said we have to make this black man fail. Our energy is going to be directed and focused on making him fail because he is a black man. Now let's go back about the relationship. Black females are not a threat to white genetic survival. Now we have all the genetic material in our ovaries, but women can entice, but they cannot impose sexual intercourse. In other words, imagine you reaching and pulling out your M16 rifle and saying to the man, you are going to have sexual intercourse. Now, gentlemen, what will happen? See, that's just physiology 101. The erection cannot be maintained in the presence of fear. Now, the Creator made it that way so you won't have a conflict. If you get afraid, you've got to exit. So the focus is on focuses on the black male. In other words, racism, white supremacy attacks us as a total people for the purpose of white genetic survival. But the intense focus is on males because they can impose sexual intercourse. Now, all the different colors that we come in, most black families don't have two people that are the same color. Everybody's a different shade, and then that causes warfare in the family. Who's lightest? Who looks the most white? Speaking from my own family situation, everybody has color shade conflict. And it's not only in this area of the world, it's all over South America, all over Central America, all over India.
Yes, everywhere.
See, who's dark and who's not dark? Who looks most white? And fight amongst yourselves. It's called divide and conquer. But all of those colors are because of the activity of white male oppressors and white slave masters. You see, it wasn't Sally Hemings in love with Thomas Jefferson. Wow. Let's get that straight. See, that would be an absolute insult talking about the slave loves the master when the master won't free the slaves or the slaves' children. That's a fantasy. No, there was non-stop rape and sexual abuse on the plantations. See, I heard a white female talking about the plantation and her family, and she was saying that the slave masters would have relationships with the African women to make more slaves. Well, I guess that's part of it, aside from maybe whatever they might have enjoyed. But let's look at how this plays out, you see, because the system of racism is sane, and this is where I went in the ISIS papers into a discussion of the phrase motherfucker. See, this is a phrase that used to be said over and over again in the system of racism, white supremacy amongst black people. I remember coming out of a clinic in Washington, D.C., and I'm coming down the stairs and some young people were passing. And the young people were, motherfucker, this motherfucker, motherfucker, this motherfucker. So I said to myself, my first thought was, why are the children talking like this? My second thought was, any phrase that is used with high frequency must have significance.
Yes.
Now, because I understood at that point the system of racism, white supremacy, I said, this language is specific to this system. Now, what does it mean? And then my brain computer just went through, well, there are five people categories, man, woman, boy, girl, baby. That covers everybody. Who is the man? If I said, here comes a man, you all, my dad was alive, you wouldn't expect to see him. Who is the man? Speak up, class.
Don't lie, man.
That means the only man on the scene. Any other male has four choices. Woman, boy, girl, baby. Some time ago, woman and girl was out. Some time ago. Okay, I said woman and company girl was out. Black men died, many of them. Don't call me no boy. So the white people said, fine, you got two choices. I mean, you got one choice left. Baby. Mm-hmm. Are you all with me?
Yes.
Come on, because we're getting free.
I'm going to close with just giving you the general slave profile so that you have some idea what we're talking about. You know, you need to be able to look in the mirror and know what you're doing, but you also need to be able to look around you at the other slaves and recognize, you know, where they are too. A lot of what I talk about sometimes people say is not relevant anymore because things have changed. But you must remember that change doesn't necessarily mean better. Change just means different. And things are different. We are in the worse condition now than we have ever been in 439 years. You know. So let me just give you a few of these. And I'm going to just move through this quickly because we want to get to Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Martin, who have a very important message to bring us. Refers to other black people as you guys instead of sister and brother. You know, we used to just call each other sister and brother, but as the white people have taught us more and more this personal independence, we don't want to say no words to each other that might suggest that we are connected or that we have any kind of family relationship. And so everywhere I go, all over the country, everywhere I am when I'm around black women and black men, what you fellas gonna do? Where are the guys? And I wanna, what are you talking about? You know, and before they call me Sister Sharazade or Sister Ali, they'll say, lady, you know, they don't want no connection. That's what a slave do. Slaves want to be depersonalized. Slaves don't think about nobody but self. Slaves selfish, trying to survive and think it can't act like it got no relatives. You know, that's what a slave does. The slave also wears brand name clothes so that the designer's name is clearly visible. Now, that's a bad problem y'all know we have. You can't look at a black man on TV. He got Nike on his head. He got Reebok on his chest. He got something else on his feet. You know, I'm so tired of y'all being slavery time, walking advertisement. If you're going to put somebody's name on, put your own name on. You know, stop wearing everybody else's name. Stop acting like a slave on a plantation. White people brag about how cheap they got something. They got y'all tricked up. Y'all brag about how much you paid for it. How much money you gave them. As a sister explained, the markup on clothing and garments is 40, 50, sometimes 75,000%. We can't afford it. We ain't making no clothes. You know? So, you know, that's something else we need to do. And, of course, refusing to call blacks by their African or Egyptian name. We say we can't say it, you know, so we try to not call people by that. We want to keep the name that we have inherited from the slave masters. Now, that's really a slave. If you just think about, as I have said before, you never find a Jew that'll name their child Adolf Hitler. So why are you still naming yours Bridget and Amy and Shirley? You know, that doesn't make any sense. Don't you see that the first stigma of slavery is that they took our name and our God? We can't say it didn't matter. If it didn't matter, they wouldn't have did it. Everything they did mattered. So when you want to hold on to the name of Johnson because your father's name was Johnson and his father was, and then some slave master behind him somewhere was named Johnson, think about that. It's no insult to your parents. They had a slave name too. So did mine. That's not disrespecting them because they were slaves too. You need your own name. And if you don't want your own name, you acting like a slave. If you're satisfied with your American, European, Gentile name, then you're acting like a slave. That's another thing that we need a re-education on. Buy cards and gifts to celebrate every European holiday. Stop doing that. You know? Every holiday the white people got black people running in the store. Valentine's Day, Easter, Halloween. Y'all coming out with a sack. You know? None of them holidays, you know, got anything on it even remotely about us. Martin Luther King, that ain't really no holiday. The white people didn't even like him till he died. They don't like nobody till they dead. Ain't no problem no more. You know? So stop giving them money for every holiday. Express your love to your loved one on sometime, some date that you pick out. You don't have to worry about being romantic. You're not the Roman. You can't be romantic. You know? A whole lot of what we try to